Shalom, Baruch Hu, Rabbi Meseches, Baba Metziah, Daaf, Kuf, Hey, today's Daaf discusses the limitations of what one can do with the money of an Iska, an investment. We discuss of backing out of half of your investment. We discuss refusing, when the Makabel, the sharecropper, refuses to weed the land. What's the minimal amount that a Makabel can back out if the field isn't producing? We discuss useless fruit. We define what's considered a weak person, tree, animal, and things like that. Gabe Tomo. We discuss wearing a backpack while davening. Some halachas of a covered for tefillin, what you could keep on your head. We begin with Naradoi, who tells us that when it comes to an iska, the Chazal divided up the investment that the person makes. Half of it is defined as a loan, which the investor automatically gets back, and half of it is a pikadon, in which he's risking. This way people will want to invest, because at least they know they're getting back half of their investment for sure, no matter how sour the deal goes. The rabbanon set it up so that it's good for the malva and the loive. The Gemara says, wait, if half of it is a loan, then the guy who's doing the investing, according to Naradoi, can do whatever he wants with that half of the money. Rava, however, says no. It's called an iska, it's an investment, and he can't just go and drink beer with that money. Now, Rav Idibar Oven tells us that if the loive dies, the money which he's been holding on to goes to his kids, and the malve, the guy who actually invested in him, loses out. But Rava disagrees and he says, no, it's called an investment in the sense that the guy who's investing still retains rights. If the guy who's doing the investing dies, the money won't go to his kids. It'll go back to the guy who invested in him. Rava tells us, financial advice. If one person is investing in another, one investment, if he divides it into two separate shtaris, instead of doing $100 shtar, he does two $50 shtaris, right? And each $50 will be half loive, half loan, half pikadon. The malva will lose out if they divide it. If they're doing two separate investments, two $50 investments, and they write one shtar for both of them, then the loive is going to end up losing out. So don't do either one. Rav also tells us that if someone gets money to invest from his friend and he loses, it doesn't work, the investment flops, and he schwitzes like crazy to try to make back that money, he can't tell the guy who invested in him, you know, cut me some slack and try to don't make me have to pay back all of the half that was a loan. He can't make that claim because the guy who invested in him can say, look, you weren't working extra for me, you were working extra for you, so that people won't say that you're a bad investment. You're working for your shein tov. Rebbe also tells us that if two people invest together and it goes up in value, the investment is successful. If one of them says, you know what, the time isn't up yet, but let's cut off the deal now. Let's split it with the guy who invested with. That was a pretty good gig. Let's stop it early. The other one can say, nope, let's keep on going. He can be an akiv because the deal isn't over yet officially. If they agree, of course, they could back out. And even if the first guy says, okay, so at least give me my half of the investment so I can back out. He says, no, I'm sorry, but your half, the part that you benefited, the revenue we had, is meshubet to the Karen. You can't back out by yourself. So he says, okay, forget the revach. Give me my half of the revach and my half of the Karen. If they're intertwined, give me both. And my entire half will be out. He says, no, I'm sorry. Your entire half of the investment is part of this, meaning the more money we're investing, the more money we can make. You can't just tag out before it's over. He says, okay, look, let me tag out. And if there's any loss because I backed out, then I'll pay you back that loss. He says, no, I'm sorry. You can't do that either because the mazel of two people is better than one. And just the fact that you backed out will ruin the mazel of this investment. In the next Mishnah, we go back to the sharecropper. If someone was a sharecropper, and in this Mishnah, it's where he's getting set a fixed rate that he's going to be paid for his work. If he decides he doesn't want to weed the field, he'll say, look, I have to give you a certain percentage, a certain amount of money, not a percentage, a certain amount of money at the end of this year's crop. So if it's full of weeds, why do you care? The owner can say, I'm sorry, you have to weed the field because the second you leave, I'm going to be left with a field full of weeds. The Gemara tells us that even if he says, look, I'm not going to weed while I'm planting, I just don't like weeding, but I'll plow up the whole field so there won't be any weeds when I leave, he could say, no, having weeds in the field ruins the wheat, and I want good wheat. And even if the guy offers to buy him new wheat from the market, from a weeded field, he could say, no, I want from my field. Right? Everyone likes their IKEA furniture more. They want it from their own backyard. And the Mekabel can't say, oh, you know what? I'll weed the half of the field that you're going to be getting your weeds from. He says, nah, people are going to see that my field is full of weeds on the other half, and I'm going to have a shame ra on my fields. Our Mishnah said that the reason why he can't leave the weeds is because it's going to be growing. Because he's going to be leaving over a field of weeds at the end of the year. The reason why the guy has to pull up the weeds is because if he doesn't, those weeds are going to leave weed seeds all over the field and make more weeds. So it's not just about the here and now. In the next Mishnah, we learn that if someone is a Mekabel, he's working on a field. But the field isn't producing anything. As long as the field is producing enough to make a kri, a pile of produce, he has to continue with the deal. Rabbi Yehuda says, what does a pile have to do with anything? Rabbi Yehuda's shear is different. His shear is that it has to produce enough produce to create the seeds for next year. If it's not even producing that, then the sharecropper can back out. In the Gemara, we learn similar case in a brisa where the field is just not producing. So as long as there is a pile that is coming out, a kri, that is being produced, that there is enough crop to make a pile, the sharecropper is stuck. He still has to continue working because he writes in the shtar that he's going to plow and plant and do koitzer and ma'amer and dosh and zerea, and he's going to make a pile. As long as he's getting a pile out of it, he's still bound by the contract. That's the pile that they're going to be splitting. This guy is a Mekabel who's getting a percentage. How much is a kri? How much is a pile? It's a machlekes. Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Chanina says, oh, this one's not a machlekes. It has to be enough that you could stick a pitchfork in it. Does the entire pitchfork have to be engulfed in the pile? Rabbi Bo says that I have heard it explained from Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Chanina that even if just the head of the pitchfork, the pokey part, is stuck in there and covered, that the sun can't see it, that's already considered enough of a kri. Levi says that it's 3 saw. Oh, takadis machlekes. The Beir Yanai says it's 2 saw. And Reish Lakish clarifies that even the 2 saw is minus expenses. Moving on, the Gemara tells us, we have a Mishnah that says that if tree is growing fruit that can't ripen, olives or grapes, Shammah says that they're still considered fruit and they're metame. Basil says they're not and they're tahar. Why are they called pritze zese? Rav Huna says they're the rishe zese. They're useless. And Yoyoda says, like Rishoyim, they're never going to reach their completion. They're going to come back as a gilgul. Like Rishoyim. Incomplete fruit, incomplete neshamas. Rabbi Yosef has a pasuk for this. When a pritze amecho yinosu laham et chazoyim et koshlu, they get up and they fall back down. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak says from the pasuk, v'hoylid ben poritz shoyfech dam. Now, how can you tell if the fruit is not good? How little do they have to be producing? Rabbi Lozer says 4 kav per press. When you load it up in the press and you do a round, you get less than 4 kav. The Rabbi Yanai says 2 kav. Lamaya says not machlekes. It's just a question of how much they would put into their press. If you put in more, then the minimum it needs to produce is a little higher. Another Gemara tells us a story, another case of weak items. If a zov and someone else go onto a weak tree or a weak branch, so the other person who goes on with the zov is tomei. It's like the zov is leaning on him. How do we define a weak tree? So the Beir Yanai says, if you can't chisel out a quarter of a kav out of the trunk of it, a weak branch, Reish Lakish says that if you could hold on to it and hide it in your hand, it's so thin, that's considered a weak branch. Next, the Gemara learns If someone is walking in a base hapras, a plowed up cemetery, which is Tamei Derabanan, but he's walking on stones to try to avoid the tumah underneath, but the stones are moving. Or if he's on a person or an animal that's weak, he's still Tamei, because he could still be shifting around a bone underneath. What's considered a weak person? Or Shlokesh says that his knees are knocking. A weak animal, the Be'er Yana explains, is an animal that while you're riding it, it's defecating. Now, the Be'er Yana says, for tefillah and tefillin, the shear is 4 kav. Very cryptic. What do you mean for tefillah? So we see this in a brisa, that if someone is carrying a very heavy bag on his back, and it's time to daven. So as long as the bag weighs less than 4 kav, he can leave it on his back while davening Shmoneh Esrei, and it won't be distracting. If it's more than 4 kav, he has to put it on the floor and daven. For tefillin, what's the halacha for 4 kav? So the brisa says that if someone has a package on his head, he's carrying something on his head, and he has his tefillin right underneath it getting crushed, so that's usur. But if it's less than 4 kav, then it'd be mutter. Next, Rav Chiyo says that if someone is carrying a bag of zevel on his head, so something yicky, if his tefillin are there, so he shouldn't just put his tefillin on the side with that yicky bag. It's not covered for tefillin. Rather, he should tie them around his waist. Or he shouldn't tie them around his waist. That's also bizoyan. He should tie it next to his tefillin shel yad. Sheila says that, that even the tefillin bag itself shouldn't be put up there with his tefillin. Abaye tells us that you shouldn't even keep the tiniest little thing, the Reva, the Pumpadisa, up there with your tefillin. Bach brings this as a raya, that they wear tefillin all the time. Otherwise, what are you doing schlepping bags on your head while wearing tefillin? Now, back in the Mishnah, Yehuda had said that the sharecropper could back out if it's making less, if the field is producing less than the amount of seeds that can be spread out next year, to replant next year. How much is that? Rav Ami says it's 4 saw per core, and Rabbi Ami says it's 8 saw per core. Husaba tells her, "Bechama berei de Rabbi Baravua." With his Eliyahu Novi making shalom, he says it's not even a machloikas. Rabbi Yochanan was saying 4 saw when it was a geshmaka, fatty year, when it was a productive year, it was a good crop year, and the Be'er Ami was talking about in the shvacha years, there an eighth of a kav is enough. Thank you for learning with me. Have a wonderful day.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.